These are eggs. Quick whisk, no risk, protein punch, power lunch, bake for dinner, easy winner, fed the lot, hit the spot, eggs. And why pick up more eggs when you're shopping? Because there are more ways to enjoy them. Like bacon and mushroom fried rice with poached eggs, delicious sautéed potatoes with spinach and eggs, or everyone's favourite, a simple cheese omelette for lunch. So versatile, so nourishing. And always choose eggs with a Board Bia quality mark for the highest standards verified at every stage. Eggs, crack on.
This week on the Indo Daily.
I actually don't believe, right, that priests said or have any harm. It just, like, thought I knew. But that's how I found out Miriam Martina was dead.
How likely is it that Trump will be found guilty of paying hush money to former adult film star Stormy Daniels?
We're talking about involvement in serious drugs activity on both sides of the border, and as well as that, the procurement of weapons.
Find and follow us at all the usual spots and over on the Irish Independent website.
On this week's Big Tech Show, how will the latest developments in artificial intelligence affect your life? Will you get new powerful personal assistants? Are you in danger of something terrible happening? We explain what's going on.
Just a couple of weeks ago, Anthropic, which is OpenAI competitor, their startup lab, actually founded by former OpenAI employees, they actually eclipsed GPT-4 only just a couple of weeks ago with their latest model, and the internet went crazy. This is just better than GPT-4 at everything. So OpenAI had to respond to that.
The Big Tech Show, available on all podcast platforms.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.
After the second break week of the tournament, Ireland return to action this weekend as they take on England at Twickenham, with the Grand Slam still very much a live prospect. We'll be looking ahead to that game and discussing plenty more on the latest episode of the Left Wing podcast. Will Slattery here with you. Delighted to be joined in studio on Luke Fitzgerald and on the line by Jonathan Bradley. And Jonathan Bradley's dogs, I believe, are there with us. Jonathan, how are you?
I'm good, yeah. The dogs are good too.
Hope they keep that way now for the rest of the show. Ireland, England this weekend. Jonathan, as I said, it's been a funny tournament. Obviously, France was first up. That was the kind of the big game of the tournament. We got over that, and then we had Italy a break week, Wales a break week, and now England. So it's kind of been a bit of a lull because the two games at home, like Ireland, were pretty much unbackable favourites for both. And while they are still huge favourites this weekend, England, there's a necessary bit of jeopardy, I think, being injected back into the tournament. But to start off, and we can get a gauge of how the two teams are stacking up against each other, do you think any England player would star for Ireland?
I'm almost loath to answer this question because back in 2019, I was ghostwriting the column of a former Ireland international, and we settled on the theme for England Week that no England player would get in the Ireland team. And then obviously Aviva Stadium, over the top line out the Manny Tuilagi, and everything unravels and that Ireland team never ever recovers. So it's just giving me horrible flashbacks to 2019 even think about that. But I think looking at it on the whole, I think you can maybe make the case for Marcus Smith. He might not even be in the England team this week, but I think if you were to make the case for one player, it would probably be Marcus Smith over Crowley. Now, obviously, Crowley has the familiarity in the Irish system now, even though he's just coming in to replace Sexton. But I think if you were to pull rugby fans across the world, I think most of them would still take Marcus Smith over Crowley.
Yeah, probably if he was fit, I suppose, given that he's up in the air this weekend. I don't know whether he'd get the nod. You know, to be fair, Mauro Otoje, great player. Like, you know, I know John McCarthy's playing well, but you'd probably take Otoje over John McCarthy, to be fair. Ben Earl is playing good rugby, probably one of the few bright sparks. Josh Van der Freer maybe not at his best, but on the whole, I think that would be a bit of a toss-up too. But the point that I'm trying to illustrate, I suppose, is that Ireland going into this game in a very strong position. Not that many England players who would put their hands up for any combined 15.
Yeah, I'm not going to be so direct as you and do the English players into Irish players. But what I will say, and you heard me kind of say this before, Will, I just can't remember an England team where, and I do think this is definitely true, I don't think one of them would get in the Six Nations team of the competition. And that is, like, that's a fairly damning assessment of any English team. I can't think of any English team in a very long period of time where you'd say, not one of these guys would get in the best out of the six teams in the competition, not getting that 15. So, yeah, look, they're at a low ebb at the moment. Still be dangerous, I'd imagine, at home. I think they'll be keen to spoil the party. I think there's definitely a number of ways, which we'll get into further on into the show, that they can disrupt Ireland and make things uncomfortable. And at the end of the day, it's still, they could win the physical battle. I don't see it happening, but they could do that. And if you win the physical battle, inevitably rugby matches are tight. Like they can be tight. You know what I mean? It's very difficult to win like by a comfortable margin if you're not winning the game physically. And they've got the players to be physical with Ireland at home. You'd imagine that they'll be up for the game and they're hurting as well after, you know, a rough enough start to the competition. Now they've had a few, I think on paper it probably hasn't been as bad, but I don't know. I think they should be disappointed with how they've played. They're England, like they're one of the biggest teams in the world. They get the most players, one of the countries with the most players playing the game, and they've got vast resources. Even though the game is obviously struggling a little bit financially there, so everything's kind of working in your favour if you're an English player, or at least it should be. And at the moment, they're just in a bad place, I think. And you hear some kind of murmurs coming out of the squad about a little bit of discontent about, you know, how much time they're spending on attack versus defence. These kind of things.
Now, like, because obviously the big thing going into this tournament where England coming out of the noises was they wanted to play a more expansive style or add to their attack. Because obviously at the World Cup, the recipe was kind of a more kick focused game plan. From your perspective, obviously being in your national setups and training in an attacking environment like that, is that alarming to you hearing that like a key back only got one touch of a ball in a training session or something like that? Like, or is that kind of being blown out of proportion a bit?
It's difficult to say. Like I do think it's easier to organise your defence quickly. Obviously, that would have been a priority because that's kind of a reasonably big change, I think, Felix Jones coming in, or it sounds like it's a big change. Even Leinster would say the same thing. But obviously, they get to work day in, day out with Nienaber, whereas you've got a really short window as an international coach to make an impression and to get the guys to believe and buy in. So it seems like that was the priority, which does make sense. But at the same time, you can't forego your attacking game completely. Like you have to at some point go, okay, if we get the ball, like what are our strengths? What are we going to try and do all the time? What do we think we're like, what are we going to try and impose on teams? Okay. And then like allied to that, where are their weaknesses? Like you'd expect to be practicing the things you're really good at. And also that other thing, that other string to your bow, which will change every week. Those few things you say, well, they're not good at this. You know, Ireland might have, say, for example, last week or a couple of weeks ago, Wales would have been maybe targeting Frawley at fullback. And that didn't really transpire. But, you know, that's an example of something that, you know, week to week would change. It sounds like they haven't put that much time into it at all from, you know, some of the, I don't know, they're leaks? I don't know if they're leaks. It sounds like they might be leaks coming out of the camp, or definitely rumours coming out of the camp that they haven't put much time into that. So I don't think that's sensible. I'd kind of be surprised, actually. Would you be surprised?
Well, it wouldn't surprise me in terms of what I've seen in this situation.
That's actually a fair observation.
Especially against Scotland.
Yeah.
Like, I thought, Jonathan, I'll bring you in. Like, never has kind of a report coming out of the camp allied so much to what I've seen so far in this tournament in terms of the England attack. It doesn't look like they've been practicing it much. And, like, the fact that some key back got one touch and he's been playing a prominent role, like, they looked so rusty in their skills against Scotland in particular. Like, there was that one that, you know, when Van der Merwe took it from 50 metres, it was just like a catch-pass situation, like, very sloppily knocked on, a poor pass from forward to Furbank, poor knock on, Van der Merwe runs it in. Like, you know, what's your reading? Like, it makes perfect sense to me, kind of having heard that quote, having watched them for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, it was just the sense that you got watching. Once it became like a 9-point game, so once it became a 2-score game, there was still enough time left. But you thought that the game was over. And I think that sort of spoke volumes about what they're offering in attack. But to Luke's point, I think that the presence of leaks almost says more than what the leaks themselves are saying, if that makes sense. So, like, Borthwick's only in his second Six Nations. Whenever Andy Farrell was at the midpoint of his second Six Nations, by and large, the public still thought Ireland were a mess, that they were going nowhere, that Farrell wasn't the man for the job. But if you remember, like, Johnny Sexton came out and said, look, with all due respect, it doesn't matter if you can see it, we can see it, it's going to come. And even when he said that, people were mostly sort of thinking, yeah, okay, you're the captain, you're putting a bit of positive PR spin on it. But he's been proven right by history. And the fact that Ireland, even though they were sort of struggling to bet in what they were trying to do in games, could see the development of their own game plan and could see the progress that they were making, even if the rest of us couldn't. Now, looking back on it, feels really, really important. So the fact that there are England players leaking these things out of camp at this stage of the tenure, it implies a level of dissatisfaction and a level of a lack of certainty about their faith in the game plan and their faith in the work that they're doing. And I think that probably says an awful lot about where the England camp is at the minute, as much as the complaints about not working on the attack. And like you say, well, it looks like they're not working on the attack. I can sort of see why they would be spending more time on defense. It's a new defense coach. Where international rugby is at, it almost feels like defense is foundational and everything else is going to be layered on top of that. Layered is the word that we keep hearing in relation to England, you know. But they got to get the defense right first. And it's difficult when you're bringing in people from 10 different clubs and trying to get them all on the same page in a very short short space of time, short training weeks. I know people say, oh, they've got X amount of time together, but it's the pitch sessions. It's how many pitch sessions they actually have to bed all these things in. But I would just worry about everybody's belief that everybody pulling in the same direction and the belief that they have in what they're doing if we're seeing these leaks this early in a coach's tenure.
Yeah, Jonathan, the point you make about, I suppose, the midpoint of Andy Farrell's 10-second Six Nations is interesting because I did compare it because, as you say, it was that England game at the end of the 2021 Six Nations when Ireland kind of kicked into gear. That was the 14th game of his tenure. Funnily enough, that was like Elias with Jack Nienaber's 14 weeks to get the defence right. It's going to be Steve Borthwick's 20th game in charge this weekend, and there's been no progress. Now, the World Cup did kind of fall slap bang in the middle, which isn't a time for trying something new. Like, ultimately, that style got them to win in a kick of a World Cup final. So I maybe take a little bit of mitigation for that. But ultimately, it's been quite a long period of time. If they lose this weekend and lose their last game away to France, which is a possibility, that's a really slow start. And he might not get that much more time.
No, I don't think so. I think particularly, like, it's funny, isn't it? Like, I think the World Cup is probably... Like South Africa would have been exhausted after the French outing, and then the weather would have been a bit of a lever as well. So I feel like everything you say is right about the World Cup in that, you know, they were effective when it mattered, but they were pretty turgid all the way through that competition as well. And you know, there were kind of worrying signs about where the team is going, where the kind of future talent is, you know, where's the excitement coming with this team. And you do need to have a little bit of excitement. You need to be able to break teams down at different points. You need, even if you're going to be fairly pragmatic about set piece and defence and kicking, all those kind of things, which is sensible, and no one can really argue with that being pretty effective as a game plan. You saw South Africa, you know, that's pretty much their foundation, I think. But they have that last element that I'm talking about. They have that bit of excitement, that bit of X factor that they can break open a game when they need to. And, you know, you do need to have a little bit of that. And England teams, the really good England teams, had that. And I just don't see it. I'm not seeing it at the moment. I'm not seeing, you know, probably a flash of it against Scotland with that set-piece move, but I just think that was van der Merwe just all over the place defensively, to be honest with you.
You're loving saying that.
Well, he's just all over the place, like, in fairness. But like, that was, look, a set-piece try is still a set-piece try in international rugby, no matter how bad the defence is. So that was probably the one flash. But other than that, I kind of just haven't seen enough from them, really, I don't think, to say, well, there's been a little bit of progress. Because I think we were all expecting that they'd come in Six Nations and, you know, some of the English teams have done okay in Europe as well. There's been some kind of sparks there that we haven't seen over the last couple of years. So I was kind of thinking, well, this might be a positive tournament. We might see a little bit more from them. I thought the defence would probably be a little bit better, a little bit more quickly, but it's obviously difficult to bed that down. You hear Nienaber saying the same thing in Leinster, and they've had some issues as well here and there. I think he could be under pressure. To answer your question about the last two games, I think if they lose this one at home... And that's a big ask. Like, Ireland are a really, really good team. Like, Ireland are an excellent team. And they're a better team than England. And they should win this one. So I feel bad for them because, like, I can't see him winning the last one over in France. I really don't see... unless France's discipline kind of remains, this, you know, as bad as it has been, they won't win over in France. They've a better chance of winning against what I think is a better Irish team at home than they do away in France. So he could be under pressure, and I think they'll probably give him maybe November at least. But I don't know. I just love to see a little bit more growth. Will, that's what, yeah, if I was an English fan, I'd be
two
concerned.
Games in New Zealand in the summer as well, which will be difficult. And then I could see him getting maybe the rest of the year.
Or that's
maybe,
what I mean. I think they get November.
Maybe just summer even. Like, if they go to New Zealand and get smoked twice.
That can happen to anyone.
Yeah, but it's a New Zealand team, and like, a lot of the guys have gone to Japan even that beat Ireland. Like, so I'm not sure if they'll be available. There's like the core of that team, Sevilla, Moonga, Sam Kane, you know, all these guys have kind of gone to Japan. Brody Retallick. So you could be playing a potentially New Zealand team in flux. So look, that's a long way off, but this weekend...
I think part of the problem as well is maybe just the selection, you know, because the last time I was on prior to Wales, we spoke about how Warren Gatland had really mitigated against expectation by going with all these young players. If you look at this England team, like this England team is a very, very experienced team. So if you're not getting results with a team that isn't for the future, then I think that all plays into it as well. And I think he's really got caught between two stools almost, because he hasn't refreshed the team. It's a very, very stable group by and large of core players that we've seen for a long time. Obviously, some have moved on, whether it be to France or, you know, Owen Farrell stepping away, but he's not picking a team for the future and he's not getting results today. So that's a very difficult position to be in.
Yeah, and he was especially kind of talking about Scotland's cohesion after the last defeat. And people, as you pointed out, people are saying, well, your team is extremely experienced, a lot of veterans there. Maybe all the combinations haven't played together as many times as Scotland, but it's not as if there's no experience. Like, a lot of those guys are in their 30s and have a lot of international rugby under their belt. So that excuse kind of people thought, I think, thought was a little watery, to say the least. Let's just move on to Ireland then. Obviously, 3 from 3, everyone's talking up this weekend. Any areas you're looking at potentially as pitfalls, or are you as confident as I am going into Saturday?
I don't think I'm as confident as you. I think I'd be a little bit concerned about the scrum, although there was some positive stuff against Wales there, but I just don't, I think this will be a different challenge this week and kind of, you know, probably some more grizzled, experienced guys probably in that front row for England, I think, which could cause problems for them. So that'll be an area, and I think England will target that. They enjoy that. I think the line-out as well would be, it was just I actually thought it was really good. I thought Wales competed very well as well. Just a combination of probably, like, some of the asks for the hooker throws were like to be pinpoint at the back, but they still missed them, you know, and kind of allowed Wales to kind of survive in that game maybe longer than they should have. So there are two areas, like, if I was England, I'd be saying, okay, well, we're going to target that scrum. We know that refs have a view on this, that there's an issue there. So that's an area where I think they'll definitely target. And I'd say they'll try and target the line-out. Again, even though Ireland have been really good in the first two games, they did struggle against Wales here and there in the game. And if you can't win those things cleanly throughout the game, pressure will build on you, you know? And I think that's easy. They're easy areas into the game for me. You get penalties from that, get territory, all those kind of things feed from set piece, general pressure. And I think if they eventually get this defence right that they've been talking about betting in, I think, Ireland will continue to play. Saw that against Wales too. They will overplay at times as well. Now, generally they're fit. They're really, really fit and they've got great skills. And over the course of 80 minutes, because they continue to play, they will generally break you down. But that's more difficult away from home. Teams can last a little bit longer. The crowd is up, you know, if the game is tight, Twickenham will be engaged. Teams can do amazing things in international rugby at home defensively. They can hang on a little bit longer. I think of some of those Wales ones with Gatland. That's as much to do with the Welsh crowd and being at home as it is to do with the coaching staff. That wasn't just a Gatland, Sean Edwards thing. I remember those games that Ireland had, like, you know, went like 250 tackle, yeah, whatever it is. Yeah, you could do that at home. You know, when people are riding you off, not one player will get in the Irish team, this kind of stuff. No, I'm not having to go with you because I actually agree in principle with it. But it's there's lots of ways I think they could win this game. And of course, they've got to kick effectively. Like, that's really, really important. I do think if Keenan is back, I thought Frawley was excellent, by the way, against Wales. But if Keenan is back, I just feel like it's another route that's kind of nearly closed down to England, because I think they'll have to kick really well against Ireland as well. So it's not looking good for them at the moment, but I can still see those three areas, four areas, where if you're good in any game, you've got a chance.
In terms of the team selection, Jonathan, like Lou touched on it there, like Hugh O'Keane, I think, has been past fit to play at this juncture. They said everyone trained fully today. So if we're operating on the fact that he's likely to be fit, he probably comes back in at 15. What way do you think the bench will go? / what way do you think they should go? 6-2 again with Frawley on the bench, or 5-3 with Ringrose and maybe Ryan Baird getting squeezed out? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I would go 6-2 with Frawley on the bench. I've seen some people sort of talk about 6-2 like it's not connected to Hugo Keenan. And I think that probably misses the point, because you either have Hugo Keenan and therefore you need to have Frawley on the bench. Like, you're not going 6-2 with Ringrose on the bench. To me, that just, like, that's a non-runner, I think. So you need to have Frawley and a scrum half on the bench. So I think if you're looking at it from the impact that the bench made against Wales, which I think you could probably argue is one of the biggest across the board bench impacts that Ireland have had, you know, it was probably for me, the story of that game was how the bench did whenever they came on. And what was a sticky point for Ireland in a game that none of us really expected to be that sticky. So I don't think I would be leaving Ryan Baird out, which is basically what it comes down to here. You know, I would want Ryan Baird in my 23, especially for this game, I think. And just, you know, what Luke said there about the importance of Hugo Keenan as well, you know. So if Hugo Keenan starts at 15, for me, you go 6-2 and it's Frawley and a scrum half as your backs, and it's a centre missing out, and a very good centre, obviously.
What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that 6-2 has become kind of commonplace now. What felt like a big risk probably isn't as big a risk if you've got Frawley there. And, you know, interestingly enough, I'd probably have to go with Murray on the bench if that's the case, even though, you know, I think probably looks like he probably would go Casey, wouldn't he? Isn't he? Like, it's tricky to say at the moment.
Is he still number two?
Yeah. Not as like for like as Gibson Park, who's very, very important to this Irish team now. But Murray, if you're really stuck, is big enough to play, you know, somewhere out in the backs, further out. He's just a good athlete. He's a big man. He could deal with the physicality. So those would be my two, I think, on the bench, provided Keenan's back and we expect him to be back. Big question is, where do you break up that centre partnership? But I just don't think you can. I really don't think you can. I think they've been too good.
Is that even a conversation? Surely that's not.
Ringrose is a pure 13, and he's one of my favourite players, Ringrose, yeah. So to be honest with you. I find it hard not to. I love the two of them, I have to say, have been really guys I have just loved watching, have been Henshaw and Ringrose, and obviously Aki's playing out of his skin, so he's going nowhere. That 12 berth is definitely his to lose, I think, at this point, which is saying something, because we're competing with Robbie Henshaw and Stu McCluskey, who are both outstanding operators. But I don't think I would break up those two in the middle, even though Ringrose is the more natural 13 than Henshaw. Yeah. He definitely is that, so that's why in my mind that's definitely a conversation. But given how they've played, it'd be unbelievably harsh. And I just don't know what it says to Robbie Henshaw.
It sends a bad message.
It says to him that you're a 12, but like, and Ringrose is 13.
I think that would say, yeah, I take that to a degree, but I think, Jonathan, it wouldn't send a great message if Robbie Henshaw, a Lion, after playing three great games, he started against Italy as well, three great games, and Ringrose has come straight back in. Obviously an unbelievable player, as Luke said, no doubting that. He's also a huge kind of, I suppose, star as well, which sometimes carries weight as well. But like, I just don't think it would be a good message. And I don't think that'll happen. I think Robbie Henshaw has been playing so well that I think it renders the conversation.
Ringrose does give you the added bit of flexibility, which is nice also if you're going with the 6-2. You could play him out wider. You probably could play Henshaw, but Ringrose is an easier shift. Sorry to cut across if you're about to ask Jonathan about it, but that also did factor into kind of how I was thinking about it as well, is that he gives you he's probably a little bit more adaptable than Henshaw. Just a thought on that, Jonathan. I don't know if you have any...
Suppose we don't know. Like, you know, I've probably watched every game that Stuart McCluskey's ever played. I never would have had him pegged as a winger until he's popped up there against Wales.
He's pretty good.
and he did a good job. So you wouldn't know. Maybe they have given somebody else a run on the wing in training. And I think almost the surprise is the wrong word, but the fact that Henshaw being so good is a story in this Six Nations is a testament to how important Gary Ringrose has been for Ireland. But we are talking about somebody who in Henshaw who is just such a high quality operator. Like, it's a testament to Ireland's depth in that position that Henshaw had almost become the forgotten man of that trio before Ringrose's injury, and it wasn't even seen that it was really a debate anymore. But I agree with you 100%. I would feel very uncomfortable about the message that it would send if somebody came in and played three games of the caliber that Robbie Henshaw has played throughout this championship and then finds himself out of the team. Now, obviously, we don't get to see what's going on in training, but, like, you know, if Ringrose came back into training today and took a full part today, then, you know, how much would you have to do in training? Like, training the house down is one thing, but how much would you have to do for Robbie Henshaw to turn around and say, yeah, that's justified. I probably can't say that I should be starting this week. And I don't think Farrell will do it either. That's the other thing. I think Farrell's... You know, we always talk about Farrell's soft skills, and I think he's probably so attuned to that kind of thing that I just can't see it.
It also, Will, he could... The one thing you could say, though, is, like, if you were to, like, I'm not calling for a drop line show. I'm playing devil's advocate here. Like, I think you could look back and say, well, look, the last 50 games, like, you probably played 45 for Ireland at 12 and he's played 50 at 13. You know, that kind of way. So, like, there's a couple of ways of looking at that. Now, I know recent history, last three games, he's been playing brilliantly and we have to, he's going to be guided by that. But I can see a conversation where he would say, look, I'm unbelievably sorry about this, but this is why I'm doing this. I want to use the 6-2 on the bench and I feel like we need to do it away from home. I don't think he will do that, yeah. But there's not 100, like, if I'm thinking about the 100 scenarios, it's not 100 out of 100 that he's picking Henshaw if he goes with the 6-2 on the bench. That's all kind of I'm saying is that maybe he might think to bring him in, you know.
I wonder would that feel more important if Henshaw and Aki wasn't such an established partnership, 12-13 going all the way back to Connacht. Like, if it was,
I think that's a big player factor.
That they were less familiar definitely, playing yeah. together, you know.
I think, say, if yeah. it was someone with the same caliber of performance but without that shared history and chemistry, I think it would be a lot easier to break them up as well.
I think that's a fair point. Yeah, look, sorry.
They play well.
The chemistry's so well been brilliant. Like, and it gives you something, yeah. like if you have Keenan and you have Frawley at 15, you have Lowe there, like it wouldn't even be so Calvin Ash is actually playing brilliant rugby. I'm really loving him. I think he's really taken international rugby. But if you had Mac Hansen here, I wouldn't even think about it. I wouldn't even be, because I'd be saying, well, I don't really mind having the physicality there because Gary doesn't really have to pass that much either, because Keenan can pass, Lowe can pass, Hansen can pass. So it doesn't really matter. You have those second, third distributors. All, like, the pitch is open for Ireland because they have all these guys in the back three who can do that. Lost a little bit now because Nash is just more a pure winger, really, and not much of a playmaker. He's had some good touches, but generally speaking, he's not a link man. But Keenan is a link man. Frawley is a link man. And it takes pressure off that. So you can be really, really physical, is what I'm saying, in 12 and 13. Doesn't really matter that you have a pure 13 from an attacking perspective. Now, I like to have, Ringrose probably has a bit more pace and that than Henshaw, but the physicality is not a problem for me. And away from home, I can see the value in that too. So yeah, it's an interesting conversation. I just thought, like, because Ringrose, it's more to do with the caliber of Ringrose as well, that I'm kind of saying, well, probably should have a discussion about that.
Yeah.
I'm sure they are thinking about it as well.
No, because it's not as if I mentioned that he is a big kind of star player. Like, we have seen in the past plenty of kind of star players being picked when they weren't playing well. That's not the case with Gary Ringrose by any means. He's playing great rugby. He just happened to
recently
get
enough as
an
well.
Ill-timed injury just before the tournament. So if he did get back in, it wouldn't be some sort of travesty, you know. Central contracts.
It's a pure preference. It's like it's a preference just, on the day. It's
I agree. I don't think he will do it. I will be interested to see, like, forecasting for the following week, and obviously it'll be maybe dependent on the result as well. What way he goes, like, Scotland wouldn't have the physicality of an English pack. Maybe he goes back to 5-3 for that reason, or do you want to double down on your own physicality?
Definitely double down against Scotland. I'd be thinking at home. Like, if we're nervous about going for another Grand Slam, you know, let's just stick it up the jumper with these boys. Like, you know, bring off these six guys off the bench. Like, I think that's now going to be Ireland's status quo.
I don't think Gary Ringrose plays in the Six Nations. I think, unfortunately for him, he got an injury at a bad time and it might just pass him by. Because, like, we haven't even touched on the fact how rusty he might be. He hasn't played since mid-January. It's almost, you know, we're going into the middle of March. It's 2 months now. For a great player like himself, maybe it's not a huge issue. But when everyone else has been playing a lot of rugby, you know, maybe.
It definitely would factor in too. Like, I think it's not that long. It's probably not long enough that you'd say.
No, it's not.
Like, if it was 3 months, you go, okay, well, no, he needs a game first. Yeah. But if it's 6 weeks, you're going to say, and Gary's a rasher. Like, he doesn't pick a fat in him. Do you know what I mean? So he's a guy who'll keep his fitness well. I actually saw him on the weekend and he's looking. He's
a
great
have
looking
a lot of fat on them, I think. Huh? Don't rashers have a lot of fat on them?
It's just, a, you know what I mean? Yeah. He's thin. Like, he's in great shape. Like, he's a great looking athlete, I always think, when you look at Gary. So I'd imagine it's not going to be an issue for him. He's not going to be like me. Like, I could put on the weight, as you can see here. But, like, you know, like, an Aki is kind of a bigger guy. He could put on, you know. So Gary isn't of that kind of mold, really, I think. Whereas, you know, he could probably come back in pretty much straight away.
Yeah, it's kind funny, of like, Gary Ringrose and Henshaw, the both of them seem to just pick up injuries. Like, whereas Bundy Aki has been so durable for Ireland since he's made his debut. He's barely missed a game. It's probably more suspensions he's been racking up.
He's missed a few for Connacht.
Yeah,
he always seems to get back for the Irish games. Yeah, not in a, sorry, I don't mean it about it, but we've been lucky with him for Ireland, you know. He's been an absolute mainstay, hasn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, Jonathan, anything else intriguing you about the team selection? It kind of picks itself, really, doesn't it? That's kind of where we're at with this team at the moment, other than maybe the bench split and then the Ringrose issue.
Yeah, I just thinking about the contrast in the team selections for me has been really interesting, because everything that Luke mentioned, you know, do England go after Ireland at the scrum? Do England go after Ireland at the line-out? Do England go after Ireland at the breakdown? And the fact of the matter is that to do each of those three things, they almost need to pick three different packs. Like, you know, they've got a scrummaging pack and they've got a line-out pack and they've got a breakdown pack. And I was almost just thinking about that, again, we're veering very close to hubris here, but it was only just thinking about that made me sort of think about how fortunate Ireland are to have such a rounded pack. Because, you know, you're talking about how it picks itself, and it picks itself because virtually everybody in there can do everything that they need to do. There's not a scenario where you're sort of robbing Peter to pay Paul there. And I think that's really where the superiority of Ireland up front for me becomes very, very apparent.
Yeah, especially with the weapons they have on the bench. Like, it's so funny that, like, we're talking with 6-2 the whole time, and it's like the identity of the players. Like, there's no clamour for, like, starting James Ryan or Conan or Baird. Everyone seems to have fallen into they're our kind of the bomb squad, whatever you want to call it. Like, it seems to be a very established unit at the moment anyway. Like, that obviously can change pretty quickly.
I'm not as convinced about the Ryan thing. It's the only one I'm not as convinced about.
Every other call, I think, is ahead of who? McCarthy? Like,
I don't know.
Can't get rid of Tadhg Brown.
I don't know. I refuse to conduct the conversation.
I don't think, sorry, I'm not saying that.
I love Ryan.
Yeah.
You know my feelings, right? I bore my feelings. I just think he's unbelievable. I think for whatever reason, something has happened where he's not as valued as he should be. I don't get it. I'd probably put it this way.
He's not quite as dynamic as the two starting second rows.
Depends what you're talking about.
Well, with Ballon Allen.
Tackling, no. Rooking, no. He's better rooker than the two boys, I think. Maybe carrying, I think definitely not as. But the other stuff, I don't know. And he's a bigger guy than Byrne. I think he's probably better than Byrne in the line-out. Maybe not defensively, but definitely in attack. I don't know. So put it this way, right? I'd have Ryan in first and I'd be picking between the other two.
Yeah, okay.
I wouldn't be dropping. I'm not saying I'd drop Byrne. How do you say? We're really nitpicking here. I think what I get from Jonathan's point is that how lucky are we to have, like, we've got, like, our starting pack and our six subs, and even, like, we've deeper than that. Like, Henderson's not even going to make it on the team on the weekend. You know what I mean? Like, we've got an unbelievable group, like two packs of, like, really top quality international players. Mm-hmm. I think. Absolutely blessed. But if you're asking me, I'd have Ryan in first, and I'd be picking between the other two boys.
Well, because Jonathan, if I was actually looking at which style kind of suits a bench impact most, James Ryan would probably be the guy I would say is probably best suited to maybe starting. And then you have like Byrne and his capacity for big moments, you know, turnovers or like random kicks through or tries, as we've seen recently, or, you know, McCarthy's dynamism. Like, McCarthy's ascent was so quick. I know he came off the bench in the World Cup quarterfinal. I actually don't really, to be honest, remember him doing any.
He was decent. He had a few. Yeah. Do you know what he had? He had those kind of small moments where you're like a yard here, a yard there, when Ireland was struggling. Kind of, we're seeing him open up a little bit more now, be a bit more expressive, but he's also playing against lesser opposition. Let's be honest about that. You know, think about who Ireland have faced so far in the competition. Bar France, who had 14 men.
Like, so you're throwing out the game where he was man of the match against a top team. I know it was 14 men, but like the men who were trying to stop him, he was like, you know, really powering through.
Still a man down for a long time.
Yeah.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves on that one.
No, but like it's the toughest his best performance against a good team, and you're like, let's just throw that one out and say.
But they have 14 men. It's a big thing for a long time.
Yeah.
There's also a world where referee decisions go against them and they've lost all three games and are on course for the wooden spoon, you know. I think to the point in general, like whenever Luke was speaking about James Ryan, that's exactly what I was sort of thinking, Will, exactly what you said there, that there is probably an argument to be made that James Ryan is more of an, or not even that James Ryan is more of an archetypal starting lock, but that the other two would be more archetypal bench impacts.
Yeah, yeah.
For me, like, I think Byrne has been so good. It's almost laughable how infrequently he wins player of the match for Ireland, given how consistent he
is for Munster.
Yeah.
I was going to say, he wins it every week for Munster, doesn't he? He must have, cabinets left in the house.
It's always, whenever somebody gets it for Ireland, it's always, yes, player of the match has been brilliant. But what about Tadhg Byrne as well? He's just so consistently good for Ireland. And I think, not that it's taken for granted, but I think for me, the way that he's been playing, it's really Byrne plus another one. I don't know what you feel like. Well, you know, that's probably the charm position that Ireland are in, that three people could sit and have a conversation and they could all think that one of the other three is the best lock, you know?
Well, you could also, like, if, sorry, just to cut across, if you did really want to fit them all in, I would actually say it's Byrne to six. O'Mahony. Like, that's the way I would maybe drop a Peter O'Mahony if we were doing that. Because Tadhg Byrne, as you said, I saw a headline quote. It was like, once he puts on that blue scrum cap, he just becomes a different animal. And it's so true. That blue scrum cap is so distinctive.
At home, he's like baking and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and he's an absolute animal in the blue scrum
cap. And he just becomes, it's the big moments. He's a moments player, like, isn't he?
Do you know what? It's more than a moments player because he actually does everything really well as well. Do you know, you have those guys, like, I would have had, who would I class in that? Like, unbelievable players, but kind of moment player. Rocky Elsom is probably that. Elsom, you mightn't see for 10 minutes.
Contribute for 10 minutes. I just mean he also has these big tentpole moments.
I completely get the point.
Like,
I just want to make sure that everyone was thinking.
Yeah, no,
I think we all think.
No, I know what you mean. Like, a guy who would be quiet for 10 minutes and then have an explosive
play. And then have this
play,
like 80 meter burst, like Rocky Elsom would have had for Leinster. And that was perfect because he had Shane Jennings and he had Jamie Heaslip next to him, who are kind of chugging along for kind of 80 minutes, just playing brilliantly. Byrne is one of those guys. He's just a freak. Like, he is both. He's gotten that turnover when you really need. How many times is he the guy that comes up with the ball just on your own line for Munster too, or a big break or something? Like, he's just such a good athlete. There's some great tackles as well. Like, Byrne has got it all. He's got, what a player he is. And I really didn't think that. I'm so glad you said the six thing, because I always felt like six would have been where he really would have flourished. But actually, he's able to do that grunt work in the row, be a guy who can come up with, what, I don't know, 15 rooks, 15 tackles, 15 carries. He seems to be a guy that can do those things and still have the big turnover moments. I wasn't sure that was even, I don't even think that many people are capable of doing what he's able to do work rate-wise. He's just an incredible athlete. So we're very, very lucky to have him. And I agree, I'm so glad you mentioned it, that I think him to six is the other option, because I just don't think, like, if you felt like you had to get Henderson in or you needed to get Baird in, you know, that'd be the other option, I think, for you. But, geez, you couldn't drop Peter Mahoney at the moment. I think he's playing brilliantly as well. So, look, we've got, like, the key thing for them now is that I think this is the sticky fixture for them. This is the one where they've got to, it's got to all come together for them, I think, this weekend. And I think they'll be judged on this weekend. So the pressure's on. Away from home, can they deliver it when there's going to be, you know, what is it, probably 15,000 probably Irish tickets in Twickenham. Can they do it when there's you know, not at home, out of the home comforts, in a place that is tricky, that is hurting as well. English rugby is hurting at the moment. Not a place they're used to being. And you'd expect a backlash, but this is where the real players kind of stand up, in my opinion.
Yeah, Jonathan, we haven't really touched on him that much, but Jack Crowley, like, obviously the second big away test, you know, when the fixtures came out, we knew this was going to be a big one, and I was always very intrigued to see his growth from the French game to this game, because the two home games are vastly different in terms of who Ireland were playing and the dominance they were going to have. And this is obviously that away atmosphere as well. Are you kind of intrigued to see how he goes? Like, what are you expecting from him on Saturday?
Yeah, it's a really good point, actually, because I hadn't really thought about it too much whenever I was thinking about the game, which I think speaks to how comfortable he's looked, because certainly I was of the opinion that I thought coming into this tournament, people were downplaying how much Ireland were going to miss Sexton. And if you had told me that three games into the tournament, we would have been talking about Sexton as infrequently as we have been, I don't know if I would have believed you, but obviously it is a big test because, you know, we've seen in the recent past, we've seen test careers at 10 come a cropper in Twickenham because of how badly they've gone, you know. So it's a big, big challenge. But I think everything that we've seen about Crowley's temperament in the big games, whether that be playing for Ireland or whether it be leading Munster into the URC title last year, I think he has shown that he certainly looks unfazed by these big occasions, and every one that he's kind of come to, he's just ticked the box and moved on to the next one. And I think we've obviously talked a lot through the championship about the quality of opposition and, I suppose, Ireland's superiority over the opposition. But I think whenever we come to look back on it, Jack Crowley is going to be a huge story here of just how seamlessly it looks like he's fitted into what we all predicted for a very long time is going to be one of the hardest jerseys in Irish rugby to ever fill, because we're talking about one of Irish rugby's greatest ever players.
Yeah, and the funny thing about Crowley and his career to date is like a lot of his big moments have actually been away fixtures, like the kind of the road run to the URC, you know, Glasgow, Aviva Stadium against Leinster, which was an away fixture, and then obviously in South Africa, in Marseille on Friday night. Like, so he is his away credentials are very, very strong. And like, I wouldn't say nitpicking, like we've obviously been assessing him and kind of really kind of in the granular detail of his performances. But if you just kind of take a step above, as Jonathan said, like, I think he's had a really impressive Six Nations. He started in really well. A couple of mistakes in the opening night, a couple of missed kicks against Italy. But like, conversations I had are really kind of being, I feel like, hypercritical of him in terms of some certain things he's doing, when I think he's managed things really well. I actually think it's become a bit of a Leinster Munster kind of fan debate, whereas in reality, I don't think that there's any debate of his performance at all. I think he's been really, really good.
Oh, yeah, he's been excellent, yeah. I mean, look, I think we all expect him to have a few of those moments. I made the point before the tournament started that the key thing for him is kind of recognising how good the guys around him are. Like, he's got a few people playing around him that are would make it into World 15s, I think. And that's not being overhyping ourselves. That's being realistic and looking at it with a cold, hard kind of eye. I mean, so recognising that and just realising that he just had to kind of step in there. Now, he still has his moments. He's a young guy, as you say, a few errors, but overall, I've been unbelievably impressed with him. Nothing to do with, we're all in the green jersey now. It's nothing to do with blue and red. You know, we have to assess him as we see him, and he's playing a great team. So it would show up if he was playing badly, because the team are putting him in good positions. And I think it's become a cycle now. He's grown into it. He realizes now where his role lies, and that his moments will come to him. This team is going to put him in good positions. So he's just going to fit in there.
Make that, like, the team is running seamlessly with him there. It's not as if any out half could have been plugged in and Ireland would have won 3 from 3 and been as impressive. I think that's what you're saying, that he's actually performed in a role.
No, I think I'm saying that he's been good. Yeah. And I think what I'm trying to say is that I think he's been good without being great. But what I always said before the tournament, Will, is that once he recognised that he didn't need to be great, it didn't need to be about him. He's got brilliant players around him. You know, luckily for him, he's had, like, Gibson Park has been so, so effective for this Irish team. Like, he's the heartbeat of everything that's kind of positive about it. That pace, that tempo, takes a lot of pressure and decision-making responsibilities off him. But he's got that pack. They put themselves into holes. They don't need to. You just, like, need to be putting a bit of deception around them. If you think about how the running lines, think of the ball handling skills of those guys. It takes massive pressure off a 10. So I think what I've been most impressed with is that he looks like a mature enough guy at his age and confident enough guy that he hasn't need to make it all about himself. He's had a few of those moments where a young guy has seen something that, like a seasoned international will go, there's a hole that it's not really a hole. It'll be gone, you know, that kind of way. So he'll get that over time. I've been impressed with how comfortable he's been in his own skin, that he recognises what he has to do and trusts his own game. It doesn't need to be trying to shoot the lights out every single play. He's, as the tournament has gone on, he has picked and chosen his spots in the game to show that little bit of running flair, to show the offloading flair, to show the cross kicks, this kind of stuff. So, he's been what he needed to be, and that's been what's most impressed me, because that's a bloody hard thing to do if you're in one of those decision-making positions where you're touching the ball a lot at international rugby. Now, I will say it's important to note how good the Irish team are, but also how poor the other teams have been. Like, they haven't been great. So I just don't want to build them up too much and then have to take them down. You know, I don't want to be doing that. I want to say he's been really good. I've been very impressed. It's definitely his jersey to lose now. But there's a lot of other factors that go into this. Like, just if Ross Byrne had come in, we'd have won these games too. I think if Frawley had been there, we would still win all those games too. I think I wouldn't put it all down to him, is what I'm saying. I think the team is brilliant.
You
were kind of saying he's a key part of it. I don't think he's a part of it.
But, like, it's the idea that you just said anyone could have come in and we would have won anyway.
I'm not saying anyone. I named two guys who are very good, who are very experienced, who are settled. Come into that Irish team, I think they win both of them. I throw all three of them.
The one in Marseille, like,
there's 14 men on the pitch.
Look, they probably did. He didn't have his best game, so they probably would have. Yeah, no, look, yeah. I don't disagree with that point.
Yeah, I'm not having a go at him, by the way. Yeah. I'm being realistic about it. Like, I'm watching the games as everyone else is, and I'm trying to be cold and calculated about it and not get caught up in some kind of hype train about him. I can see all the great stuff about him too, but like, he doesn't need to be that. This Irish team is a brilliant team. This is why we haven't been talking about Sexton. It's not because of how good Crowley is. It's because of how good the team is.
But the point is, if he wasn't playing well and the team was still winning, it would have been a big talking point, because it would have been like, oh, Johnny Sexton, there is a big drop off. The team are really going to carry in Jack Crowley. But that hasn't been the case.
But like, did they cut Wales open? No, they were decent. They were okay against Italy. They were good. They nailed them. It was most of the big talking points after that were, well, how good was Ireland's defence that they nailed them? That was the big talking point after Italy. And France, if you ask me, had a yellow and had a red during that game. Like, we need to be calm. Like, this is the weekend now. This for me is the big test. Can he do it this weekend? I'll have said, okay, he's arrived. But all the other ones, there's enough in my mind to say, well, let's just cool the Jets just a little bit. He's been really good. I've been really impressed with him. But there's a tougher challenge to come here. And Scotland, by the way, are playing better. Scotland would be a tough challenge at the end of the tournament. I think Ireland beat them nearly every time at home. But they'll be a tough challenge. They'll want to spoil the party. And they've got some quality and they've got some confidence. I don't know where from, but they've got it. And these two games will be tough for him. And I think, I believe he'll do really well. But these are the tests for me. The first one should have been, but there was 14 men on the pitch.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with what you said there. Like, I didn't mean to be like, no, saying no, you can't, well, he's like the man leading Ireland to a Grand Slam.
Yeah,
I'm just been impressed with how he slotted in and how the team has ran smoothly. Like, there's been very little drop off. So that was the point I was trying to make. Jonathan, you know, it's all as if the kind of the finale has been written, the script has been written and hand delivered, that Ireland have this Grand Slam wrapped up. But there's two key games still to go. It's funny, like, you know, you're talking earlier, like, you didn't want to stray into hubris, but like, reading some of the commentary, like Sam Warburton, for instance, whenever he's in the media, he's saying like he thinks this is the best Ireland team ever to play in this, or the best, sorry, Six Nations team of all time. He's saying like that how impressive they are, that like no team can live with them. He's saying Ireland could dominate for years. And I've heard similar sentiments echoed by, you know, other pundits from other countries. So it's not just like as if here in Ireland we're getting carried away. You can only go by what you're watching and what you think might happen at the weekend. But ultimately, I suppose there's still a delivery that is needed on Saturday. But it's funny to see the other pundits from other countries kind of saying these things. It's not just in Ireland where we're getting kind of high on what this team are doing. It really is translating. Everyone is now taking notice properly.
Yeah, and I suppose it's very hard to argue against Warburton's point on that podcast, in the sense that no team in the Six Nations has ever won this many games in a row. No team in the Six Nations has won back-to-back Grand Slams. But I suppose where we're sort of tempering things, and Luke alluded to it there, is the fact that the other team, the story of the Six Nations is more the fact that the other teams have been so bad. Like, I don't want to sound that I'm being very negative, but like, the surprise to me has been more how bad the other teams have been than how good Ireland have been, or how consistent Ireland have been, despite the massive, massive disappointment of a World Cup between these two Six Nations. But maybe some people were predicting it. I don't think I saw many people predicting it. Like, I don't think anyone saw France being this bad, and that's had a really transformative effect on the whole championship, because we knew that Italy were under a new coach, we knew they were building, we saw how bad they were at the World Cup. Wales, obviously not as bad at the World Cup, but in the same sort of boat. Scotland are what Scotland have been for a number of years, and England in the last couple of years have been a two-win team, and at present are a two-win team and could finish a two-win team. But to me, it's not that Ireland have kicked on to another level from last year, I don't think. I think it's just that really the opposition have all regressed, and in the case of France, have regressed massively so.
Yeah, like, it's not as if there's an asterisk, because, like, you know, you get the same trophy no matter if it's the best Six Nations quality-wise of all time or the worst. But as Jonathan said, like, the step back that some of these teams have taken, Ireland are just kind of maintaining their level and they're pulling clear of the rest of the field, was by dint of how poor the rest of the teams have been.
Yeah, no, they have been, you know, and I think doesn't make this weekend any less of a challenge. But like, I just think that Ireland looked like, you know, they've kind of maintained, I think it's probably fair to say, you know, kind of some excellent form. But I think as well, Ireland have, while Sexton has gone, the Gibson Park point is probably, maybe I haven't emphasized that enough, because I just feel like that's a massive, massive part of why Ireland have been reasonably consistent despite Sexton going. I think he's a massive part of it. I just think I think he's a huge part of this Irish team and the transformation they've made. He's just the pace that he plays at, the decision making. There's a few rash ones here, but it's because everything's going 100 mile per hour all the time. And it really suits them. They look like a really fit bunch and a really skillful bunch. He's the perfect guy in there. So I think he's been a big part of what's helped someone like Jack Rowley bed in and look like it's been so seamless for the team generally.
Pre-tournament thing we did in the Inno, I said he'd be the biggest loss just because I feel like he makes Ireland tick. I know we've loads of good players that they lost, but I agree with everything you're saying.
I would have said Sexton would have shaded it, but I think you're right now on reflection. It looks to me at this point that you're right, that Gibson Park might be an even bigger loss. But the point I was kind of trying to make in parallel with it was that France, they've lost kind of two, like those two guys, I don't think we can underestimate how big a loss that would be. I think they look like quite a different outfit actually with DuPont and with Entomac there. You know, Jalabert's decent, but he's just not the same. And he doesn't have that stability of having, you know, the magic inside him of DuPont, you know what I mean? So that's probably a big reason for the drop-off in France. Look, they've looked a little flat too, but I think a lot of the belief, like DuPont seems like he goes off and just plays sevens and he's just a freak at that, even though it's pretty much a different game, you know? Just magic, magic rugby player. Like he might be, we might be looking at the best ever there. He might be the best rugby player ever, which I just love saying because is he 5'9 or 5'10? Like he's, what a player. He's got it all. But that is a big thing about why France has dropped off. And I would have said that France, if they had full complement or even just DuPont, it would have been a good bit closer over in Marseille if he was playing. I don't think that that's that much of a stretch to say that. I think he transformed that team, even if they're still, you know, suffering a little bit from disappointment from the World Cup. I just think he'd have lifted them. He has those magic moments and he can do it behind. He can do it the other way too. He has defensive moments for you too. Like you saw the one against Ireland. So I don't think we can underestimate the loss that he is to French rugby. And I think if we were looking at that, we wouldn't be as downbeat about the other quality in the tournament, because France still might be the best team in the tournament, Will, is kind of what I'm getting at. And then we'd have Scotland's tricky, playing decent rugby, could upset Ireland, not beyond the realms, and England away. And we're kind of going, oh, this is actually all of a sudden, you know, this could look very different for Ireland too.
But the big difference in the last, say, 3 years of the tournament is just France being terrible. Like, because every other team is basically playing similarly to how they have over the last three tournaments, except France. They've taken a massive step back. Scotland are still competitive, but can slip up. England have been dire. Italy. Wales are in flux. Ireland are playing really well. France are the big kind of change in this tournament, and it's made Ireland being able to open up a decent gap. To the extent that, like, Ireland can afford to lose one game and still win the Six Nations.
It's been a disappointment, actually, for the competition as a whole, hasn't it? Yeah, it's been disappointing. Like, you'd love to have it a bit more neck and neck at the end.
But it's even quality-wise. Like, it's just, or excitement-wise. The games themselves haven't been great, I don't think.
No, I think that's completely fair. Like, and they've looked like, attacking-wise, they look a little bit rudderless, don't they? And he always gives them, even if they've looked a little bit rudderless, you get some magic moments of France still. The outside backs, I mean, they're still exciting to watch. But the little bit of DuPont magic that you get every game, you'll tune in for. You know what I mean? You'll tune in for his three or four magic moments where he goes past two or three guys, hands off a 20-stoner, and then throws a 30-metre pass. Do you know what I mean? You tune in for them alone, and he brings excitement to the tournament. He's a massive loss. I don't think we can overstate what a big loss he is to rugby, Six Nations. Like, he's a magic, magic player. Such a disappointment that he's gone off to sevens where probably no one's watching him, you know? But the tournament, it's sad we're talking about that.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit sad because I'd love it to be, I think Ireland are playing really good, and I'd just love to see a little bit tighter. I'd love to see a little bit more pressure on them. I think they'll have it this weekend, Will, but I don't think they'll have it in the last weekend. I think it'll be a little bit... That's my worry, is that I think they win this weekend. And not that it's a foregone conclusion, because Scotland could turn them over. They've got some good players. But generally speaking, Ireland should win that game. I'm more comfortable with Scotland, who are a better team than England, I think, by a bit, actually, at this stage. I'm more comfortable with us playing them at home than I am against England away, put it that way.
Yeah. We might move on to the moment of the week now, the left-wing moment of the week in association with Bank of Ireland. I'll get to Jonathan's one in just a moment, which Luke alluded to there, some DuPont magic in the sevens. My one was from Super Rugby over the weekend. I was watching, I think it was the Blues versus the Highlanders on Friday morning, and it was actually just a moment that drove home to me a part of why Ireland have been so good under Andy Farrell that we actually haven't discussed a huge amount. It was another high-tackle debate they were having on the commentary. Oh, you know, that's never a red. Oh, this is terrible for the game.
Oh, Barrett's.
And it just, no, it was a different one. I can't remember who it was, but it just brought me back to, like, their commentators are still having the same conversations, high tackles that they're saying, oh, the game has gone soft. Whereas in Ireland, we've just kind of moved on with the way the game is now being played. Like, think about how few times you see, like, a tackle being reviewed in an Irish game from an Irish perspective. I know Bunyaki got a red card, I think, in the win over England that I referred to earlier that started this great run under Andy Farrell. They haven't got a man sent off since. I don't think they've even had a tackle referred to for, you know, a sighting or that since. Ireland, more so than any other team, their discipline around the tackle has been squeaky clean. And it just hammered home to me when I was listening to that conversation, being like, this conversation sounds like it's from 10 years ago almost. Whereas if it was a commentary of an Ireland game or a match a Leinster or Munster were involved in, the commentators tend to just now, they've gotten with the program as well. It's just like, oh yeah, okay.
He's off.
Yeah, he's off. Let's move on with things. Whereas in New Zealand, they're still having the same old conversation. Like, Sam Kane got sent off in the World Cup final. Like, you know, it was in
cost them the game,
arguably. So I just thought that was a moment that really hammered home to me that Ireland, across the board, it filters down into the provinces. You see them getting very few red cards as well, I think, compared to their other you know, rival teams in other countries. I think it was just an interesting thing. Jonathan, what was yours?
That's actually a really good point. I hadn't thought about it that way, but just how jarring the Super Rugby commentary feels, and that's a huge part of it. Even the, like, discourse around the smart gum shields that they were having like 2 weeks ago, it was almost like technology was ruining the game for having the audacity to try and protect the players. Yeah. Well, Luke said that nobody was watching. I was actually watching.
So was I. So was I.
Well, you're watching because DuPont is playing, not for any other reason.
Oh no, 100%. Like, I'm not a big sevens guy at all, but I suppose I have that curiosity, which is what they really wanted out of this move. And it was good, obviously, to Ireland's detriment. It was good to see him tearing it up there in the semi-final. Ireland actually had a really good tournament. This Zach Ward scored a try later on, and they just missed the conversion that would have sent that France game to extra time. But France then winning for the first time in 19 years with DuPont, and then to see all the sort of social media stuff afterwards. I saw him at a Lakers game where he'd been presented with a DuPont Lakers jersey and stuff. So I think it's having the desired effect in terms of spreading the gospel, I suppose.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see how big the sevens is at the Olympics by dint of him being involved and it being in Paris like that. Like, as much as I disagreed with him going and playing and leaving France in the lurch, like, for him, it's a great opportunity, as you said, rubbing shoulders with Hollywood A-listers at the Lakers game.
See,
and stuff.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, neither did I, but I did watch it, like, Jonathan. And he did score one, like, phenomenal try, and you're just like, this. He is just such a good athlete. Like, it is.
Oh, he's magic, like, man. He's just ridiculous. He's already got all, like, the skills. He's a tackler as well. He's tough as all. But you see him chasing the guy down as well. Like, he's so fit as well.
Physical.
He's fit, he's physical.
He's got it all.
I honestly am thinking he's the best ever. I never thought I'd say it, because I just thought no one would ever touch McCall for me. But, like, he's... I think he might be better. He won't have the World Cups to show for it.
Well,
but
he might.
I don't think he will, but he might. He might. Let's not rule it out. But I think he's mad. I just love watching him. Like, he's a treat to watch, isn't he? Glad you're watching. I feel like I keep having to go at the sevens. I don't want to be doing that, because, in fairness, just want to say, really admire the athletes and the quality. No, I admire the athletes. No,
the damage has been done.
No, I admire the athletes. But I'm just 15s is still where it's at. It's a 15 spare that has everyone tuning in. It's not the other way around.
That's some apology. Yeah. Like, you only got halfway through.
No, they were brilliant athletes. But, you know, the point is still well made. I think a few weeks ago. What I would say is there was another magic moment, but from an unlikely source over in Cardiff on the weekend for the Rob Russell try at the start of the game. Tom Clarkson with the block down and collect, and I think he burst past the fella too with a handoff.
He pulled away.
Yeah, look, I have a soft spot for tight heads, given there's one reared me at home, but that was magic to see, and a great finish by Russell. He's got some serious wheels on him, in fairness, but the magic was all Clarkson, I thought. So yeah, great to see that. That was my moment of the week.
Yeah, okay, we'll finish with predictions then. Ireland, England at Twickenham. I do think Ireland are too good for this England team. I think it would have to be a very poor performance from Ireland. And I actually do think the recipe would be that South Africa semi-final. If they were to get turned over, it would need to be like torrentially raining and England's kicking game. Freddie Stewart maybe putting a lot of pressure on Ireland. But I do think if Keenan is fit and plays, he's very good under a high ball. I don't see them being targeted in that way. Cavan Nash is very assured under a high ball too. So I'm going for like kind of a 10-point Ireland win and, you know, matching on to that game against Scotland. What about you, Luke?
I think it'll be tighter. I think maybe... I think it's sweaty. I'm going to say 5 points. 5 point Ireland win. England may be pressing at the end, but Ireland hold them off because I just think they'll.
I would love that.
I think it might be that. I don't think it'll be one for the pure. I think it'll be one for the purists because I do think England will have to kick a lot against Ireland and put pressure on at set piece, etc. So I'm going to say 5 points. Ireland don't open them up as easily as we all think they will. I'm hoping the other, and they are a better team, but I think Ireland should still win. They have too much on the bench for them too.
Well, the thing is, Ireland are going for a record 12th consecutive 5/6 Nations win in a row will be a new record, and all their previous 11 victories have been by double digits, so they've been laying waste to teams for, what, the better part of 2 years. So if they can keep that streak up and finish it out with a Grand Slam, like Sam Warburton in terms of the best team we've seen, certainly maybe the most dominant in terms of the score lines and the scoreboard anyway, in terms of double-digit victories, I would argue with. Jonathan, before I get your prediction, unfortunately for us anyway, you'll be leaving us at the end of the week, moving on to Pastures New. You've been a great guest over the last couple of years. In particular, I feel like since the World Cup, we've really hit a groove as a threesome, so we'll be sad to see you go. But
and you've got Ulster. Every week I feel for you. I've had some tough.
It's too much for you and Dominic Farland.
Like every time I was coming on, to discuss an Ulster disaster.
But, you never got one of the big weeks. I don't think you ever got one of the big wins.
Things are going well. I've really enjoyed it. So thanks a lot for having me on. And as Will says, when we were there. The three back at base during the World Cup, especially, like it was great to come on and chat rugby with you.
Just I suppose Dan McFarlane departing is you couldn't continue after that. It was just too sad.
Solidarity, you walked out.
he left while I was working my notice period, so you can imagine how pleased I was with that. Expecting a nice, easy 4 week, just quiet, you know, everything quiet, and then that happened. So
lovely.
Yeah. Well, we'll get you out on this prediction then. Do you think Ireland will win this weekend?
Yeah, I would say Ireland by in the region of 12. I just don't think England score enough points against Ireland's defence, which is rapidly becoming possibly the most effective of any unit in this championship.
And since you won't be here with us next week, give us your Scotland prediction as well. We'll let you get a 2-for-1.
We can hold it against you while you're not here. Rip the back off you.
I'm enjoying being going to that game and not working this. But prediction, I'll go in the same region. I don't think a very different game, but I think the margin of victory for Ireland will be about the same. And sort of as Sam Warburton was alluding to, we have this double digit Grand Slam then.
Yeah, well, it's set up to be a very intriguing and exciting game this weekend. I'd like to thank Luke for joining me tonight and Jonathan for joining us tonight and over the last couple of years. I know everyone who's listening has probably really enjoyed it as much as we have. We'll have plenty more podcasts later in the week reacting to the team news and after the game on Saturday as well. So in the meantime, you can subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts or listen on independent.ie. So until next time, thanks so much for listening and goodbye.